to do an introduction on sponsorship in general. And what I'm giving you, of course, is my own ideas and what my own experience has been. First of all, I do have a sponsor. I have had a sponsor from the moment I decided that I wanted to get involved in recovery of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, of course, it is highly recommended that any and all of us so do if we wish to get sober. It is the fastest and the most expedient way for any one of us to get sober and stay sober. One of the things about the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, many of you, I've heard many people over the years, because the term sponsor theoretically is not included in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they're wondering, well, why in hell should we have to get a sponsor? So it is like the 12, sponsorship is quite like the 12 traditions that they have, in my opinion, they have found through the process of trial and error over the years that sponsorship is the most effective way to teach and to ensure the recovery of both the sponsee and the sponsor. You know, history says that way back at the very beginning, there were two things that I think had a very strong involvement in the evolution of sponsorship. First of all, as soon as Dr. Bob, as many of you may now know, of course, that Dr. Bob is the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he and Bill Wilson met in Cleveland, in Akron, Ohio. And almost immediately, Dr. Bob started working with alcoholics at the St. Thomas Hospital with a lady by the name of Sister Ignatia. And at that particular time, through the process of getting alcoholics, the term sponsorship started developing, because as they knew they could get a new prospect involved or wanting to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, they would place him in the hospital. And back in those days, they had an AA sponsor, and the AA sponsor not only brought him in, but paid for the alky to get recovered at the tremendous rate of $15 a day and $5 for each doctor visit. Things have changed just a little bit, cost-wise. But it's interestingly enough, and I would just pass that on, is that that is the very basic format that back then that was used is the same very basic format that is used in every recovery house that has AA orientation throughout the United States, the very formula that Dr. Bob established way back then. But anyway, that's the phrase sponsorship that was created, because they referred to, and the one who paid for them and came and visited, they became responsible for that alcoholic and therefore became their sponsor. Another thing that had a huge factor in developing in the success ratio of why sponsorship seems to work so well, once again, in that same period of time, Cleveland, which is only about 30 miles away from Akron, Ohio, have a big newspaper called The Plain Dealer. And The Plain Dealer wrote a series of articles on alcoholism because of what was happening not too far away in Akron and the amazing effects that seemed to occur. There was a man who was sober at that time, the name of Clarence Snyder. He was almighty God in the area. And I say that only because I've heard him speak, and he didn't refer to himself as that way, but he sure acted that way. Anyway, because of the articles that were run in the Cleveland Plain Dealer, they were in that area overwhelmed with responses of people wanting to get help. And what they were doing, and this has a real strong impact, it certainly did in my life, is that they would get four or five calls, and they would have four or five sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They would give them, here's five for you. And even the person might have 5 or 10 days of sobriety, he was given a list of four or five or six people to take care of. And they would be responsible to get these people, bring them to meetings, and stick with them to help them get sober. And that's how, and they had a, and that seemed to be the format that was amazing how fast and how many people seemed to get sober in the Cleveland area. And it seemed as if the proof of sponsorship was working most effectively. In my own personal experience is that we are never too young to sponsor. I offer that opinion because I was told that by my sponsor. When I say that, when someone asks you to give what you have been given, that it's your obligation to give the best you can. And of course, what I have found, I have been sponsoring since my fourth month of sobriety. I am fortunate that I was able to work the steps by that particular time. What I have found is to ensure my sobriety, nothing has been more effective than trying to pass on recovery through the 12 steps. If you are reluctant to sponsor, and that's what my pitch is that I was told a long time ago that it's a wonderful thing to have your name on that board, but it's even more just as important, if not more important, to be the sponsor on that board because of the value. Chamberlain Chuck C. told me and taught me that what I have been given to me through the process of these 12 steps from my sponsor isn't really mine until I give it away. Once I start giving it away, I ensure my own recovery and constantly learn. I have sponsored and do sponsor an awful lot of people over the course of the years, and each and every one has taught me a great deal more than the one that preceded. Everybody teaches a little bit different, but everybody learns if you are involved in sponsorship. So that's my basic instruction, my basic introduction to sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous. There is one line that is in the book that also is very important that I would like to close with. It says there's little, and I'm paraphrasing it, but it says there's little likelihood of long-lasting sobriety unless we're completely honest with at least one human being. That's not the strong suit of an alcoholic, to be completely honest, one, and to do it with one human being. But it seems as if that's one of the things that helps us reinforce in sponsorship, to have one person who knows everything about you so that you will always be current with that person, and that should be one called a sponsor. And with that, I'm done.
And there will be tapes of the meeting available for a cost of $5. And now Linda is going to discuss steps 1 through 4.
My name's Linda, and I'm an alcoholic. Well, you know, I think what we wanted to do here today is, assuming that some of you have not sponsored, or some of you have, and maybe we can just, you know, share each other's ideas. I brought my books and everything. That's kind of a nice thing to have when you're working steps. I brought my pad, and guess what? I brought my pen. I guess how many times to put on the paper, black and white, put on the paper, and we're going to talk about that too. And I want to thank John, because he actually had 15 minutes, but he gave me 5 extra, and I was all, oh, thank you, God, because he knows I love a good conversation. All right. That's right. Well, you know what I'm supposed to be talking about here today is steps 1 through 4, and I think that that's a lot to condense in 15 minutes, 20 minutes worth of, like, hey, this is the pearls of whatever I've received in this program. And I want to share what John had shared. This is my experience and my opinions and what has worked for me. And when I first came into the program, they said to get a sponsor, and I was like, whoa, what does that mean? Like, when I was in Al-Anon, I was stoned, but, you know, they still make you get a sponsor there, too. And so I didn't really know. First of all, I had to ask somebody to be my sponsor. And what was I looking for in a sponsor is I was looking for somebody who knew how to stay clean and sober, preferably somebody who had some time. In fact, the first sponsor I ever had, she had a couple years. She sponsored some people, and I gave her the quiz, how much time do you have? Have you worked the steps? You know, so that's helpful. you know, do you sponsor people, and ultimately, will you sponsor me? That was my first experience. She didn't really like me. Who cares? She did it anyways, and that's what the program teaches you, you know. What I've learned in this program is to start out with reading the first 165 pages of the big book. This is my big book. See, it's all love. This is a love big book. It's all rainbow color. I highlight in it. I make notes in it. This is my manual. This is where I've learned to do life, okay? So I go through this book, right, and this is like my study guide. So when I'm passing on the step works, I want them to know, you know what, I want you to get what's in this book. I don't necessarily want you to get my opinion, because on any subject, any topic, I can go back to the book and say, what's the book have to say about that? What's the solution according to the book? So, I mean, if I gave you my solution, heck, my seat, you know, my chair was earned in here just like yours, so you didn't want that. Mm-mm. So, anyway. All right, so when we go to step one, you know, we are powerless over drugs and alcohol, and our lives become unmanageable. And for a lot of people, that getting powerless over drugs and alcohol can be kind of a stickler because, you know, we think we have all this control over alcohol. I mean, if I had all that control, I'm sure I wouldn't be here. I'd said, well, if I'm done with that, but nope. I thought, no, I could just have one, and then I'd end up with 10 or in a blackout or whatever. I never knew when I could have one, 10, 20. So I wanted to get down to the powerlessness is the lack of the ability to control and enjoy, don't forget that part, our drinking, you know, because sometimes you could control your drinking, but I really didn't enjoy that either. So when I'm talking about the first step, the unmanageabilities, it was like they told me to read the first 165 pages and read the first three steps in your 12 by 12. And these are the essential tools of the program that I learned to work with. And what I found out is that, you know, in the first chapter, starting with the foreword to the first edition or even the preface, you know, right here up to more about alcoholism is where the first three steps are contained. You know, first of all, it goes through the first couple of chapters, and it's trying to get the newcomer to relate. It was trying to get me. When I started to read this book was when it's like, I read this book so that I could fix my ex and to get him sober, right? He's the one with the problem. Why should I have to stop drinking? That was a good, you know, sounded good at the time. Anyway, so we went to like the foreword to the first edition to kind of get the newcomer acquainted to what is this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know what it was. It was foreign to me. It was like talking Chinese. We went to the doctor's opinion. So this is like, well, see, we have the doctor saying this about this is what alcoholism is. And so we have some validity from somebody of the professional community to verify, hey, you could be an alcoholic. And and then the last is like, you know, Bill's story there. So that's not the last. But in Bill's story, again, I was relating to what he was going through the feelings and looking for the similarities and not the differences. And I just went through all the chapters, and this was kind of like how to relate the first chapters of the big book and use them in conjunction with my 12 by 12. So, see, I just kind of put this together. Like, I actually do study this book. I actually have done different topical studies according to the book as far as fear, resentment, anger. Those are the things that, you know, just plague my life. So, I mean, I've had to do a lot of studying to stay here. So when I went through the first three steps, my first experience was that, you know what, that was an internal decision that I could understand, knowing that I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that I was an alcoholic, that my life was unmanageable. That was pretty apparent to me and not real difficult to figure that out, okay? But there are times when we're trying, some people aren't sure. You know, there was 2 years where people were saying, I think you're an alcoholic. I'd be like, what do you mean? Are you sure about that? You know, so I wasn't sure I was an alcoholic. I wasn't convinced. Being thoroughly convinced, we're ready to take certain steps, right? So I had to come in here and be convinced that I was an alcoholic. And part of that convincing was that, you know what, I was identifying through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what did it for me. It wasn't somebody telling me, hey, you might be an alcoholic, because I didn't really care what they had to say anyway. So in the second step, well, let me go back just for one more minute, because what I learned in the first step, I think that this is very, very important, that the first step is not just getting powerless over drugs and alcohol, but it comes down for me, it's like, I'm powerless over people, I'm powerless over places, I'm powerless over events in my life. When I begin to get powerless, it's like surrendering to win. I begin to, now I am having a format, I'm having a place to come to where I can start to let go of these things. You know how your head runs and runs, stays in the problem, stays in the circumstance. Now I have a place to come to begin to get powerless so that, one, it takes the power out, the voices in my head, the committee, you know, calms down a little bit, and I'm able to have that. So my first shot at it was, hey, you know what, I read the book, I read the first three steps, boom, you know, I'm ready for my fourth step. As I grew in sobriety and I began to know how to use these tools, it was, hey, you know, I began to learn how to write that I'm powerless, and maybe, you know, some things are write 15 powerlessness, 15 unmanageabilities. You know, it's like, well, I'm sure I had 15 and more, but You know, these are just some of the different ways that I have worked these steps. But the most effective for me is the place where I come to, or as I begin to put it on the paper, getting powerless over it. And I always start my writing out with, I'm powerless over drugs and alcohol. I'm powerless over this person. I'm powerless over this event. And this is how I always start my writing. Okay? And then when I go into the second step here, you know, I know that the second step is about God is going to restore us to sanity. And I think it's really important for a newcomer, you know, they're thinking, well, are you thinking I'm insane, like I'm going to be checked in or something, you know? But it's like insanity, as it was explained to me, there was two things, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Doing the same drink, I'll drink here, no, I'll drink over in Santa Cruz, no, you know what I mean? I'll have beer instead of wine, you know. So these are all insanities to me, thinking that I could have one when I never wanted one. You know, the insanity of doing it, forgetting the pain of the nights before. It's the insanity that precedes the first drink. That's what I was taught as far as the second step and insanity. Of course, I've had other crazy events in my life, but we're talking about the newcomer and as it pertains to insanity. So, you know, that's pretty insane to be continue to drink and use drugs no matter what the cost. And I'm telling you, I work with some women, I mean, they're facing prison, they'll lose their kids, in spite of everything that is stacking up against them for them to take a drink or to use some drugs, they go out and do it again. That's insanity. That's the insanity of drug addiction and alcoholism. That's cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, so I think that these first three steps are really something that is done within your heart. I think it's something of an internal nature that begins to happen as we read the information. We're getting new information about ourselves. We're probably, I was anyways, examining myself for the first time because I had, you know, they talk about inaccurate self-examination. You know, I'm a legend in my own mind. I'm not as good as I think I am, and I'm certainly not as bad as I think I am either. You know, there's some good and bad of all of us. So here I'm beginning to learn some things about this thing called disease. I'm learning about this thing called a spiritual malady. I'm learning about a physical obsession, the allergic reaction that my body has that produces a craving for alcohol. The phenomenon craving, I'm learning some new stuff here about Linda and what her condition is. And, you know, and that helps me to come to terms with my addiction, my alcoholism. Helps me to come to terms with that. So, reading the book, studying the book, highlighting the book. You know, I would sit down with my sponsees. You read a page, I read a page. Let's talk about what we read. Let's get deep. Let's really, what are we talking about here? How do I apply that to my life? And that's what I want to pass on to the newcomer. It's like we're not talking Chinese. The book is so simplistic and so easy to digest that, you know what, gives us. And you know what? I need it every day. Even though I've been here all this time, I need to know. I can't tell you. I could probably rehearse chapter 5, how it works. I get up in the morning, it's like, I forgot how it works today. You know, I need to be reminded. How does it work today? Or I get tangled up in the daytime. So when I began to have that third step, when I take people through the third step or women through the third step, chapter 4 is we agnostics, you know, and I think that that's really important for them to come to believe that God can restore them. And we haven't had much restoration at this point. A newcomer certainly hasn't at their first and second step. And it's kind of like choosing to believe. And what I want to say is that this isn't based on my feelings. And at that point, I may have them go back and read the spiritual experience in the back of the big book so they could see that, you know what, a spiritual experience or coming to believe that God is going to restore us simply can mean that I've had a change of attitude as described in the spiritual experience in the back of the big book. Okay, so that helps me to not, I don't have to have some way out white light event like some people do. My husband did, but I didn't. I'm like the educational variety, or slow, you know, whichever. I'm slower. Okay, so that's kind of like if they're struggling with the God thing, it's like keep it simple, using the group as your higher power. If it's working for us, you know, that can come as time goes on. And I don't think, you know, I have a You know, I was diligent to jump into my steps. I didn't mess around with it. I knew I didn't want to drink anymore, so I didn't mess around. I never messed around when I was drinking. I was willing. I was never too tired to get a drink or go get some dope. I never was. You know, so that's how I worked my program. I worked my program with everything that I had within me because that's how I did my stuff. So as we're moving into that, in my big book, some of you may know, which I'm sure you do, but, you know, I began to see here that was like italicized in the big book, beginning in chapter 5, it begins at step 3 to italicize for you in the big book. This is where you're at in the big book, like in chapter 5 on page 60, it begins the italicis. So I know that the first two steps are before page 60, so that's where I go to find those. And if I'm working with my third step in my 12 by 12, I read my third step, I come to my third step here on page 60 where it's italicized, and I begin to read. Hey, and you know what? The fourth, the fifth, the sixth, and the rest of the steps as you go through these chapters are italicized right for us, so we know where to go to find that. And so I always point that out to my newcomers of, you know, use this book in conjunction with your 12 by 12. I use them both. I use them together. And I don't tell them to do anything I haven't done myself. You know, I don't make it up as I go along. I sponsor the way someone brought me through the steps, okay? So, when I finally got to that third step, you know, it was kind of like getting on your knees. I get on my knees. I'll do it again and again. If I ask my sponsee to read their first three steps, you know what? I'm going to be reading my first three steps. And that keeps me in my program. That keeps me alive and on the beam with what's going on in the steps. And it also just makes that run deep within me. So that's how I know what I know, because I don't tell them to do something I'm not willing to do myself or I haven't done myself. Okay, so when I got to step 4, okay, that was a major, you know, that's a major piece of work. And I began that, first of all, in the writing, I go straight to the book. And I put out here, too, on the step 4, on page 67, it says we put it in black and white. On page 68, we're talking about fears. It says we review our fears thoroughly. We put them on the paper, black and white. It says on page 69 about our sexual inventory, but I don't just take the sexual inventory to be in regards to my sexual relationships. I put them to mean my relationships and how I'm doing. I subject them in each relationship that was significant to me, you know, I asked myself those questions. You know, whom had I hurt? Where did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I at fault? And what should I have done instead? So, see, it's about Linda. But I want to just talk about that because as we got this all down on the paper and we looked at it. So it's talking about my resentments, black and white, I put it on the paper. It says over here on page 68, it talks about fear, I put them on the paper. And one of the most valuable pieces that I have is that, you know what, I learned that I can have resentments. And behind every one of my resentment is fear. Fear is behind my resentment. And that's what it says according to the book. Now, I can have a fear that has nothing to do with a resentment. I can have fear of speaking in public. I could be, you know, be afraid of being alone. That's not a resentment, you know. So I had to learn the difference about, you know, writing down my resentments, writing down what it affected in me, and I had to learn that an effect was not a feeling. You know, what did it affect? And I look at what each one was as I write down who I'm resentful at, what the cause is, and I do it according to the format in the book. I make columns on my paper, and I do it according to what it says, and I ask myself these questions, you know. You know, it says, was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal sex relationships, which had been interfered with? And so I look at those effects. And then if you notice in the book, it'll say, notice alongside of it is bracketed the word fear. So, you know what I do? I don't just say, well, I had a little fear there. I really look at that resentment, that anger, and I say, what am I really afraid of? I'm afraid they don't like me. I'm afraid they'll reject me. If we take it from the big book, it's Mr. Brown. He's resentful at Mr. Brown. The attention to the wife, told the wife of the mistress, Brown may get the job at the office, and then what did it affect in his life? So he lists the effects, which is his sex relations, his self-esteem, his sex relations some more, so self-esteem, his security, and then there's the fear behind that. And so I began to look, and I thought, well, what is Mr. Brown really afraid of here? You know, it's like, well, he could be afraid that he's going to lose his wife, he could be afraid of the confrontation, could be afraid of, you know what, he could lose the mistress, he's not going to have his cake he needed to. He might lose his job at the office, so now he's having financial fear. He might not have any money. I might get a divorce. He could be afraid, what is everybody talking about in the office? And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And that's how fear runs my resentments. But then I go to the next pages, and I see that it talks about the fears, even though we had no resentment in connection to them. See, fear has run my life. Fear of people, places, and things has run my life. But now it says I have a new creator, I have a new employer, and I get to walk through triumphant arches as I do this work in the book. And so when I sit down with the sponsee, I'll do these and I'll show them how to write. You know, we'll take an example from their lives or my lives, and I'll say, here's the columns, and I really spell it out for them. I don't assume that they know this because they've never done it. You know, so I'm not making any assumptions about the person that I'm working with. So I really needed to see about what was the fears. It says, wasn't it because self-reliance had failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem. So as we go through that, and I'm able to look at, you know, what are the fears behind my resentments and what are the fears that I have in addition to that, I did like a three-part inventory, and one was the resentments, and boy, did I want to tell everything I was resentful and who had done what to me. And then I had the fears, which I wasn't so like, great, that's not so juicy or great either, you know. It isn't like, oh, you can't be a victim in that, you know what I'm saying? But then we went to the sexual relations and your personal relationships that you've had. And I think that, you know what, it's like people talk about the fourth step, like, oh, this is really hard. But you know what's harder is walking around with it. It's harder to walk around with that stuff and have it drive you and be afraid and be resentful, be pissed off, be in internal pain, discomfort, and all that, than it is to put it on the paper. And it's like, you already know all your stuff. I know all my stuff. So, you know what? I can't be afraid of what I'm going to find out because I've been carrying it with me all these years. I better be more afraid that this stuff is going to take me back out there to have a drink. I better be more afraid of that than I am of putting the stuff on the paper. And, you know, when we were out there, we weren't particularly too careful about, you know, ooh, I'm so ashamed, you know. We weren't going around doing that. I didn't care who thought what, and I did what I did, okay? And that's how I work my program. I just did it to the best of my ability. As time has gone on, I've had a deeper level of healing. My big issues were domestic violence, were being physically and emotionally abused severely, and I came in with that, and I was hurting. And, you know, I wrote about that in my inventory, but you know what? I didn't receive that healing. So you know what? All these years, probably the first 2 years, I'd write about it. I'd start, I'm powerless. I'd go through, God's going to restore my thinking. It's going to restore me emotionally, financially, physically. I would say, okay, God, I'm turning this over to you. I'm asking you to heal me in this. And I would begin to write my resentments and my fears behind that happening ever again, or my resentments about it happening ever at all. And that's where I began. And to me, that's because I did that over and over, and I did it for as long as it took. I didn't quit 5 minutes before the miracle of having that spiritual experience of realizing that as a result of doing these things, I no longer hurt when I told you about my past. See, the healing had happened. The magic happened. And it was because I was willing to do it as many times as it took to give it up. You know, and I just kept giving it up, and I kept putting it on the paper. So thank you for letting me share.
One thing I neglected to mention at the start is there is a pamphlet called Questions and Answers on Sponsorship. We're out of stock on those on the moment, but I'd suggest checking the literature rack for those. And I'm hoping one of these guys is going to tell me where they buy the crystal balls. That's what I wanted to know when my sponsor told me I had to be a sponsor. They just seem to know everything. Like, you know, I go in there and I'm going to lie, and they just look at you, and it's like, well, I guess I better tell the truth. So, okay. Now Johnny's going to tell us how to take sponsees through steps 5 through 8.
I'm Johnny O, an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August the 12th, 1968. I've been sober for over 29 years. And when I took the steps, such as it was a little bit simpler than what I hear today. This is what I've learned. Alcoholics are the kind of people that will say, help me, but don't tell me what to do. So this is what you're going to be facing. Yeah. They also talk about everything except what's really bothering them. So you got to know these things when you're dealing with another alcoholic. As a sponsor, I am not responsible for the baby's sobriety. Don't ever think you are. This is not a panel to tell you how to take the steps. It's rather a panel on how to help somebody take the steps. And so, if you're on the program and somebody walks up to you and says, "Would you help me take my fifth step?" and you haven't taken it yourself, decline, because you will never know the emotional stress that person is going through to take that fifth step. It's a big deal. It's one you're afraid to do. First thing I would have asked Linda was, where did you hide it when you did it? You know, I always ask my babies that. Where did you hide all this writing when you were taking that fourth step? And if they say, "I didn't hide it," then what do? Live alone? You know? And they'll say, "No, well, you know, didn't you write down things that you're not too proud of?" I kind of lighten it. I try to make the fifth step as light as I can, because that person is really uptight. I've seen them. I worked in Success Realty with Jack Holt, who listens to a lot of fifth steps in the back room, and you could see the guy come in. And he was just flustered because he was going to take his fifth step. It was a big deal. It was a big dump. And when you walk out, you see a face that is peaceful. So one of the things when you're dealing with somebody who's going to tell you the secrets of his life is that I would suggest that you make him as comfortable as possible. You make damn sure there's no cell phone or pager or anything like that that can interrupt this person once he gets started. Because once he gets started, if it's anything like the ones I hear, it just comes right out and they don't want to stop. So I would say that you'd pick a place that's relatively quiet, where you can be alone and you know you're not going to get interrupted. I hear fifth steps at Persona Park. You know, I think that's one of the great places. You can just sit under a tree somewhere and you know that other than a squirrel running over you, that's probably the only thing that's going to have to break it up. As a sponsor, I think in a fifth step that, you know, you'll probably be a little scared too. I think that the fifth step is kind of a double-edged sword. There's a need to trust another human being. And there's also a need to be trusted. We who have walked the way for five or years or whatever, and we have to learn to be trusted with information that is vital to somebody else's life that is never passed on. And so if you're going to be a sponsor and you're going to hear a fifth step, you're going to hear that kind of stuff. There's so much. AA has changed in a way from when I took my fifth step in that my sponsor just listened and listened and listened. He did not give me any feedback. So feedback becomes a question mark. There is a lot of sponsors that who give a feedback to the person who's taken the steps, and there's some that just sit there and provide a pair of ears. They just listen. And you never know what role you're supposed to take. I took my fifth step in a machine shop with my sponsor in an open-air office where there were 10 centerless grinders going. And I just gave him the biggest secrets of my life. And the only reaction I got was, "That's it. That's it." And when I got done, I was so, you know, I got done with the biggest relief, the emotional vomit, or whatever the right word was, that I didn't feel right by him going. And so, again, I had to go to a Catholic priest that night at confession. I just didn't feel right. And so I walked into the confessional, and I don't know if there's many Catholics in here, you know what a confessional is. There's a black cloth there, and I said, Father, would you come from out from behind that black cloth, because I'm a member of AA, and I have to tell you all the secrets of my life, and I'd rather do it eyeball to eyeball than to a black cloth. And out came the priest, and it turned out to be a young curate. It was kind of a 50-50 chance. There was an 86-year-old Irish pastor and about a 35-year-old curate, and I got the young one. If I ever got the old one, I'd have got shot. You know, but the way it went, I just said, Father, I'm here to take my fifth step of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all of a sudden, all of the things I had written on my sheet, I forgot about them. I forgot them. And I had the sheet right in front of me. And I said, this is how your mind can go screwy in a fifth step. I said, Father, there's some things I just got to tell you. And what is it? Well, number one, this is the actual words. Number one is, I'm tired of coming to church, and I sit, kneel, stand, up, down, down. I can't concentrate. And he said, well, why the hell don't you just sit down? And that was really bothering me, because I'd been to AA meetings where you know, you can just sit back and take in what people are saying, and you don't have to kneel or stand or sit. I said, I can't pray to statues. And he said, well, don't. Now, if I had got the Irish priest, the old one, I'm sure I would have got a different thing. And then he said to me the following. I'll pass it on, and this was the highlight of my fifth step. He said, see that altar back there? I looked back, and it was about an 18-foot altar with a sculpture of the Last Supper. And he says, isn't that what AA is all about? Just a group of people sitting around a table talking about how to live. And I looked at that picture of the Last Supper, and it's been on my mind ever since. I went to church after that, and I didn't take the prayer out or the prayer book. I just sat and I looked at that picture of the Last Supper, and I said to myself, that must have been the first AA meeting. You know, just a group of people sitting around the table. And that young priest gave me what I needed. And as a sponsor, you will have to give your baby what he needs, and you won't know what it is. So my suggestion when you become a sponsor in the fifth step is just let the words out unprocessed, because it will be God talking through you to another human being, and you will say to him whatever is supposed to be said, and you'll never know what it was. Quickly, step six. What is a defect of character and a shortcoming? What's the difference? Anybody know? I asked my sponsor that. You know what he said? Who gives a shit? Take it. Okay? Do it. This is what Bill Wilson writes and describes a defect of character, which is in step six, you have to get ready to have it removed. This is what a defect is. Since most of us are born with an abundance of natural desires, isn't it strange that we often let these far exceed their intended purpose? When they drive us blindly, or we willfully demand that they supply us with more satisfaction or pleasure than is possible or due us, that is the point at which we depart from the degree of perfection that God wishes for us on earth. Listen to this line. That is the measure of our character defects. That's what a character defect is. It's when a normal, natural desire has gone astray. We Alkies are the kind of people that were 180-degree kind of people. You know, we go to one extreme or the other. And when you take these things to an extreme, they become defective, sexually defective, money defective, all kinds of obsessions come up, and no matter what, we've got to have it, whether it's money or sex or any other thing. We've got to have it, and they become a problem to us. What is the shortcoming? Listen to this one, because this is what it says. Anything less than perfection is a shortcoming. Think about that. Anything less than perfection is a shortcoming. That's what this 12 and 12 says. Anything less than perfection. So here we are, and we're getting ready, and we've said something, and all of a sudden we're screwing up. Yeah, which means God ain't done his job, right? No. It means that we still have to make an effort to help our own sobriety. We make an effort to help ourselves in these areas of defects, and we fail. That's the whole thing, is that we fail. So if you are working on not telling lies or not screwing around or not doing this or not doing that, and you're failing, what are you developing? Humility. You're becoming more humble because you've failed. Or, to say it in a different way, is that the difference between the men and the boys is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective and the perfect objective, which is God. What happens to Alkies when they come to the program? In their grandiose thinking, they start to think what a real sober person should be like, what they act like, how their life should be, and what happens. They actually achieve self-determined objectives. And when they get there, they have a problem. That's not God's objective. That isn't what God wanted for you. And so you start to develop, by failure, not by success, but by failure, humility. And then when you get to step 7, it's easy to say, God, go ahead and do it. I surrender myself to you. In all humbleness, I don't have what it takes to be that perfect human being, because perfection is an ideal, and I can't achieve the ideal. The only ideal I can achieve is step 1. I cannot drink. The rest of it's nothing. And on to step 8 real quickly in a minute or so. If you're a man, I don't know how to sponsor women. If you're a man, these are the things in step 8 that I would look at. If you led any kind of life like I led, put on your list the IRS. Yeah. Do you owe the IRS money? 2, how about the state? State of California. Maybe another state. Maybe you're a geographical guy. How about judgments? How about liens? And it's going to get even worse. How about child support? These are the things that are going to kill your sobriety. These are the things that's going to take away that contentment and just wipe yourself away from it. How about traffic tickets? Yeah. Isn't it beautiful to drive to an AA meeting looking in the rearview mirror all the way? Because you got 3 or 4 driving stuff against you? So these are the things you're going to have to put down on that list, because these are the things you're going to have to make amends for quickly. I know that in a group like this, in the group that I get sober in, there's always people who have to work under the table in their first year or so of sobriety. They cannot work for a regular job because they would get their wages garnished immediately. And so I had to work under the table for almost 2 years. Because as soon as I've got a regular job, they garnish my wages, and boom, I was gone. So those are the kind of things you have to clean up fast, and that's what this 8th step is going to be about. How about your love circle? The people you live with, your family. Those are the kind of things that I would put on that list real fast, because that you want your life to get better. The list that was made up for me was, who are you going to make amends to? Why are you going to make that amends? And more important to the sponsor, how are you going to make that amends? And then you take that list to your sponsor, and that would be you. And so therefore, I talked over 2 minutes over my time, so I'll go on to the next guy. Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. And now Danny O is going to briefly tell you how to take a sponsee through steps 9 through 12.
I love that word briefly. You understand what I'm saying? My name is Danny O'Connor. We're a great flockaholic.
Hi, Danny.
I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to be anywhere. I'm jazzed to be on this panel. We got about 112, 114 years sobriety. And I like, me and Linda are the babies of this gang, you know. So as far as I'm concerned, we had the word proper is to be used. We had the proper person kicking it off, and we've got the proper person wrapping it up. Maybe it's her responsibility to, I don't know, hit on something I missed. There's no way you can do any justice to this, but that's what this is all about, one alcoholic helping another alcoholic not to take a drink today, you know. I just basically tell you, when I woke up this morning, I went right to the power and I asked God to please help me don't take anything today and to take care of the kid. And I read and prayed for a couple hours, and I knew that this was going to transpire this afternoon. And I did a little homework. I did a little homework this morning, then I laid down for a while, and then, because that's the doctor's orders, and then when I woke up this afternoon and took a shower, I did a little bit more homework, and it's not important for me to tell you what that homework is, but I will. I'm a student of the book, okay? I'm not a teacher, I'm a student, and you're going to hear a lot of pros and cons on the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can only tell you how I was raised, okay, and that's exactly what it is, how I was raised, okay. And in return, I try to the best of my ability, okay, to share with the people that I sponsor, which is a privilege. This whole thing's a privilege, on how I was taken through the steps. And it seems like, I'll be glad, you know, it seems like the longer you get sober, the more mellow you get, okay? But the more you come to a point. See, what's happening here is we're talking about a life and death situation, okay? We're talking about if you don't take the steps, and there's a big difference as far as I'm concerned, and it's not my opinion, it's my experience, okay, is there's a difference of working step 9 and taking step 9. Because if I work it, leave it to my own devices, okay, I'm going to miss something. See? So I need a sponsor who will risk his friendship with me, okay, telling me the truth. I have a spiritual advisor. Okay, I have both have been with me since May 22nd, 1981, when I walked into my very first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting at the Alana Club of San Jose at 1122 Prairie Avenue. Those two entities have never changed. So, on step 8 and 9, go up to 7 children and make an amends to that you've done everything humanly possible known to mankind. Okay, how do you make an amends to these 7 children? See? So they sent me on a course. And let me tell you something. It's exactly what's written in this book from page 76 up to the middle of page 84, where it says this thought brings us to step 10. Okay? We didn't deviate 1/10 of an inch. Okay? I was told what to do. Okay, and I did it. Now, that may not fit people, and that's fine. Okay, but I just celebrated 17 years. My wife and 7 children love me. Okay, that ain't me. Okay, but I also got to admit to you that it's a lifetime amends when it comes to my wife and 7 children. You know, it took me 11 and a half years to pay off the state of California. You know? I need, still to this moment, I need guidance from a sponsor. I need guidance from people that have been here for a long, long time. Okay, and it's amazing that this kind of panel's here. From this young lady here, all the way down the line, every single one of us not only sponsor, but we're in service. All of us. And all our babies sponsor, and they're in service. See? And all I'm saying is the first line of chapter 5 of how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I don't want to drink, so I'm staying on the path. Okay? My spiritual advisor really helped me on step 9 because what she did for me was she said, don't worry about step 9. You ain't going to have to do step 9 or you don't have to do step 9, whatever. I forget what it was. She may have politely lied to me a little bit. I don't know. Okay? And then all of a sudden, after the inventory was read, which is step 5, I was fortunate enough, and I'm only specifically speaking from my experience, and it's the same thing that I do with the people I sponsor. When I hear a fifth step, okay, by the time that human being leaves the Rose Garden or the park, the list is made out. That's 5, 6, 7, and 8. I'm very, very grateful that they didn't tell me go home and do 6 and 7. Jesus Christ. And I get real adamant about this because I became a free individual. So what happened was, she spent a lot of time with me on this step. Okay? Because I didn't know what I was doing. I've never made an amends to anybody before in my life. If I did, it was a lie. Or I was under the influence of alcohol. Step 10, the first word in step 10 says continued. The first word in step 11 says sought. So I continue to seek. And step 10 for me, John Sponsor told me one day, if you do step 10 every day for 30 days, if you read it, he guaranteed me that my life would change 100% on the inside and 100% on the outside. And I've been doing it for 8 years. I did it since the last Saturday Night Live convention at the LeBaron Hotel downtown is when I officially started. And step 10 now has just become a stop sign. That's the whole gamut, you know. Can I get through all the emotional hard times, you know, that we go through if we stay sober? Continue to take personal inventory. Personal. It's real important for me to share that. Just mine, not yours. No matter what you've done, just mine. Okay? Step 11, I love it because it says, sought through prayer and meditation. Okay? To improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. For me, it's real important for me to share with the people that I work with is there's no boundaries in prayer and meditation. There is none. You're going to hear some stuff or whatever, but there's no boundaries. Okay? And it's real important for me to share that. It's all about seeking. It's all about seeking a power greater than myself and trying to do His will and not mine. Okay? Part of step 12 for me is practice these principles in all my affairs. Very simply, I don't. But I tell you what, I give it a hell of a shot. You know, and it's real important to let you know that on the list that John talked about, my name was supposed to be quote unquote at the top of the list. Okay, I didn't learn how to forgive myself for 13 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I forgave everybody and everybody forgave me, but I never forgave myself. So I make it real important that we do a certain spiritual exercise through the power of prayer. And it's a slow process. Step 12 for me talks a lot about the marriage. It's talks a lot about things that are real important for me today in my life. When I deal with my wife, what's really, really nice is I don't try to improve our marriage or have it whatever. I just try to eliminate the severe emotional twists that have often stemmed in my life that always stem from my past. Okay? And as a direct result of that, I got one of the finest marriages that came down the pike. We had a woman come to the house this morning, and she... Don't ask me why my wife stayed with me. I was a dog. Okay, but I can stand up here today and tell you that because of these 12 steps, and steps 9 through 12, that my wife is my best friend. And she's forgiven me, and I've forgiven myself. You know, and... I went to a closed men's meeting one day, 400 West Campbell, and I heard a man that's got 40-plus years make a comment that if anybody's in anywhere in and around the steps, which I was presuming, again, presuming, he meant step one, he says, you can kiss yourself in the ass goodbye. Okay? And I believe in that. Okay? I also want to let you know that one time in over 17 years I've hurt somebody in sponsorship. It's real important for me to share that. Okay, that I took the bull by the horns and tried to run his life. And it almost cost me my life and my sobriety. It's happened once. It's happened one too many times. So especially with step nine, okay, we go right by the writing. Right by the writing because... As you continue to stay here, you really don't know when you sit down what you're going to hear. See, you really don't. I haven't heard everything. I've heard a lot of stuff. And when it comes time to, the ninth step, I've had to go see my sponsor, or I wouldn't be afraid to ask these people. You know what? I don't know what kind of... I don't have this experience. Okay? What should I do? You know, give me some input. Okay? And I just want to thank you for... thank Danny for... It's a privilege. It's really, really a privilege to be part of a panel, okay, that as far as I'm concerned and been my experience... has saved my life and my sanity. And there's a whole bunch of O'Connors running around here saying they live their papa. Okay? And it's a direct result of what they've talked about, what Diane's going to talk about, and what I've shared. Thank you very much, and God bless you.
Okay, and now Diane will finish up for us. I just wanted to say that I'm really proud to be part of a group that, you know, we can put this many people on a panel and have over 100 years of sobriety. We didn't have to go out of this room to do that.
I'm Diane. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everyone. I want to thank Danny for having invited me. It's always a profound privilege for me to be a part of anything in Alcoholics Anonymous and sharing on what for me is the pearl of great price. The great gift of the last almost 24 years, sponsorship, being sponsored and sponsoring, and then being allowed to serve with these mentors of mine, these pals. I wouldn't try to touch what they've said for $1 million. I tell you, it's been great today. Thanks. I've been privileged to do a number of things in Alcoholics Anonymous, but nothing continues to touch me more deeply than working with others, being worked with. I think the single scariest thing I ever did in my life, the single most frightening, threatening, numbed me to the bone, was asking another human being for help. I had never, ever done so. It was a moment of commitment into Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was the moment that I asked my sponsor to sponsor me. And from that time to this, I have never been without the anchor, without a sponsor. I'm currently being sponsored by the sister of my first sponsor, simply because she moved away to Oregon, my first sponsor did, And she strongly suggested that I keep firmly anchored in the turf where I lived and breathed and had my being. And with my ego and with my... it was easy for me to get into trouble. It would be real good to continue to have a hometown sponsor, one who could keep a thumb on me. It's interesting because I never think about what I'm going to say in one of these deals. I just don't. Unless it's a service pitch, I let it happen. But sitting on the panel today, what occurred to me that wasn't touched on were some of the things that I believe sponsors do not do. Some of the very powerful lessons that were thrust at me when I was early in my sobriety, things that indelibleized themselves in me and said to me, don't ever. This is not what a sponsor does. Very early on, I remember there was a woman, and I really loved her, and I connected with her because she was a school teacher. And as far as I knew in my early days and months, you know, she was a good AA, and she was there all the time. But apparently she had problems other than alcohol. And some of her well-meaning friends decided that her sobriety could be enhanced if she were not taking any kind of medication which had been prescribed by a medical doctor. And they teamed up and they talked about it in these little women's meetings that I went to, and they helped her get off this medication so that she was totally free of anything. And I remember watching that with a lot of apprehension and a lot of fear. I didn't know why, but boy, it did not ring true to my being. And I watched it happen, and I watched them get all excited because she was no longer needing to. And it wasn't even a month before this woman crashed and burned, and it's never been the same since. So what that said to me is, you know, you are not a doctor. You have no understanding whatsoever. You know, let the doctors do their jobs. Do not ever, ever try to tell another human being what to take or what not to take. Along the same lines, there was a gal that had cancer and had to have his hysterectomy, and she was having a lot of problems behind that hot flash, and she was pretty young. And people tried to tell her that hormones were not, you know, whatever. And I know today she has tremendous problems with scoliosis as a result. Her bones needed those hormones. And one more time, well-meaning people messed with that, and... it taught me another lesson. One more time, you know, I am not a doctor. I do not know anything in that arena, and shut up. And then another friend of mine had a sponsor that to me seemed very controlling and very rigid and very structured. And she got on this girl about, you know, what to eat and what not to eat and what to sleep and what not to sleep, and had her writing it all down, and had the girl just freaked out because, you know, it became so obsessive for her that she was even worse. You know, my dietary habits were, I mean, I learned in sobriety about what was important that would keep me from going crazy and what wouldn't, but if I had been pounced upon by someone and had someone had me writing down everything, I mean, this is kind of what I was used to before I got here, this kind of control. And anyway, I watched that not work for her well. And the other humorous thing, because it relates to me loud and clear, was, you know, we hear a lot about relationships and do not do. And I was married when I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was in a dead marriage to a very, very, very nice man, salt of the earth, sweetest guy. I had no resentments against him. We lived like ships in the night, didn't make love, didn't make war. But in my being, I think I thought that if I stayed the way and worked these steps and stayed active in service and worked with others, somehow God, the magic celestial bellhop, which he is not, he will not get me out of something I've gotten myself into. I need to do that. Would come down and not make it necessary for me to suffer the disgrace of yet another divorce. And I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. I fell in love with an AA buddy. I didn't plan it. I wasn't looking for this because I certainly wasn't going to disgrace myself again. Plus, I'd heard well-meaning members of Alcoholics Anonymous with, you know, what they said about relationships and how. Anyway, I was pretty close to 4 years of sobriety at the time. And I fell in love with a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd often said to my mother through the years of many men, how will you know if you're really in love? And she would smile at me and say, you'll know. You'll know. And I knew. And yet I was married to this wonderful man in Al-Anon, and he was married to someone else. And it caused a bit of a mini-store, didn't it, John, in Alcoholics Anonymous? John was pushing two at the time, and his wife was sponsoring my husband's wife at the time, and my husband at the time, even though he was an Al-Anon, was being sponsored by Jack Holt. It was all really cute. But what I must tell you is this. There were people that pounced on me and said, if you leave this man, you are not to be in a relationship. You're to get your own place and stay away from Perry and do nothing for a year. I'm here to tell you, Perry and I have been married for 19 glorious years, together for 20. The energy, the love that we have for each other spills over and I believe help a lot of people. Had I listened to people at the time that wagged their fingers at me, I reminded Al Easthouse of this the other day, because he said in a big book study, coincidentally, not knowing, you get involved with somebody else's spouse in this program and you'll get drunk. And for somehow I knew that that was not where it was working for me. But you know, John mentioned Chuck and Elsa, and I went down and spent a weekend with them, and Elsa was the one that set me straight on this course. You know, she said, you keep your side of the street clean, you trust God, you clean house, you stay involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she knew after being with me for a weekend that I was okay and that I was not off into a lot of trouble. So what I've learned from this is that, you know, it is a privilege to work with another human being to sponsor an Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a profound privilege. I am not Lord and Master and no more than a girl I sponsor. I am not more wise, more intelligent. I may have a little bit more of life's bitter experiences than she when she arrives in Alcoholics Anonymous. But once I have done the thing that I'm here to do, and that is to guide her to a spiritual awakening through the steps, we're equals. We always have been. But in terms of knowledge, of understanding, and the path becomes even more a two-way street. I am convinced to the longest toenail, to the shortest hair in my head, that any girl I have ever sponsored must have helped me more, must have added more to my life than I ever possibly could have added to hers. I believe sponsorship is a friendship thing. I do not ever look at I am the sponsor and you are. I mean, I never look at it that way. I don't even really talk about the girls I sponsor as sponsees. I talk about them as my friends because they are. Because they are. We mutually help one another. And there's not a girl that I sponsor today that does not have this kind of relationship with me. I often remind them because life happens. And they become confused. I become confused. Sometimes they help me more than my own sponsor does because they've got experience in an arena that my sponsor doesn't have. But, you know, Chuck taught me this too, that everything I came here wanting to know, I have always known. Always known. It's within me. It's just covered up. And the way I can find it is to uncover it and discover and discard what's in the way through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything that I've ever wanted to be, when I came here, I already was a child of God, a child of light and love. And again, I can find out who that person is by uncovering and discovering and discarding through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's no greater way to do that than working with others. I have learned more about me from each girl that I have worked with, that I continue to work with, than I ever did working on my own with a sponsor, even though I learned a great, great deal. It is the pearl of great price. It is the great gift of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the joy of living. And I highly recommend it. Thanks for allowing me to be here today.